Hello, it's Sunday afternoon, and it's time for the Money Hour. This is Harry Brown. So glad to be back with you, and I hope you are too, and I hope we will have a nice discussion today about a number of things. Now that we have heard the 5-minute commercial for the George Bush campaign for president, and I'm going to set aside for a couple of minutes the material that I was going to talk about in this first segment, because I really want to refer to what you just heard on the news. You heard almost a complete newscast that was a commercial for the George Bush campaign. First, we heard excerpts from George Bush's radio broadcast, his weekly broadcast as President of the United States, in which he took the time to tell us what a terrible president John Kerry would be, and what they have done to secure this country and make it safe and so on. And then the announcer gave further excerpts of what he said, putting the words in the announcer's mouth rather than George Bush's mouth. Then a little bit later, he quotes from Rudolph Giuliani telling how George Bush pulled this country together, turned it around on a dime on September 11th, and did a magnificent job of leadership. And then even further, we hear the trade representative from the Bush administration telling how George Bush has helped the trade of the country and the commerce and made the country more prosperous and so on. All this in a newscast, and not one single line of rebuttal of any of it from John Kerry. Now, please understand, I'm not a Kerry supporter, and I'm not a Bush supporter. I'm not going to vote for either one of them, because I have too much pride in what I believe and my own integrity to vote for people that I think are bad for this country. I don't care whether anyone says somebody is the lesser of two evils. I'm not voting for evil. I would only vote for somebody I really believed was going to do something to help this country, and I would vote for him whether or not I thought he could win the race. So this is not a pro-Kerry statement that I'm making. What I want to point out to you, because this has a lot to do with your money, what I want to point out to you is that a great deal of the news that we rely on in this country emanates from the government. 90% of what we know about the war on terrorism and terrorists overseas comes from the government. You may hear it on Fox News, you may hear it on CNN, you may hear it on ABC News, but they are dealing with material they have gotten from the government. And it doesn't matter whether it's just the war on terror, it might be about the war in Iraq, it may be about various foreign governments doing this, that, or the other thing. It's all filtered through our government. And the people we call reporters are working with press releases that come from the government in so many cases. Because of the internet, we are now getting more of our information from places other than the government, from newspapers overseas that we would never have seen in this country, but now we see them instantly on the internet. Now, my point is this, that what we know about the economy also comes in large part from the government. And when I say what we know about the economy, not about how the economy works, not about the principles of economics, but specific news about the economy. Is our jobs being created? Well, George Bush says they've created 1.6 million or something new jobs. Well, that's campaign rhetoric again. And it's campaign rhetoric from the day somebody is inaugurated in office till the day he leaves office. It doesn't matter whether there's a presidential campaign going on. Every president wants to look good, and every administration wants the president to look good. And that means the Department of Labor, the Department of Commerce, all these different people are going to put the best spin they can on whatever there is. And so we get this from ABC, NBC, CBS, and the various cable news networks, and we think we have the news, but what we have is what the administration has chosen to make available. Now, there are some things like monthly reports on the computer, the consumer price index. We don't yet have a computer price index. Consumer price index and the producer price index and the trade balance and things of this sort, which come out, and we presume that they are accurate reflections of what they have found. But that brings up another point, and that is that all of these things are gross estimates. Nobody knows what exactly the consumer price index should be at this point. What happens is that a few government employees go out and sample prices here and there around the country, and they extrapolate from that. There's no way in the world you could construct an index that would be 100% accurate. Now, all of this that I'm saying is to come back to the point that you should take any news you get, whether it is political news, economic news, news affecting the investment markets, you should take it all with a grain of salt. It all has political spin somewhere in it. It all has some kind of vested interest trying to get you to believe something or other. Now, that doesn't mean that none of this information is of any value whatsoever, but it means you must be very, very careful when you hear these things. And I'm glad, actually, that this came up in the newscast today, because it reminded me to bring this up. It's a very, very important point. You may have gleaned by now, if you've been listening to this broadcast for very long, that I'm very skeptical about a lot of things. I'm skeptical about track records. I'm skeptical about people's ability to predict the future. And I believe skepticism is very, very important when dealing with your money. Your money is precious, and you got to be very, very, very cautious about committing it to things based upon the news you hear, based upon somebody's track record, based upon somebody's inside information. You have to be very, very skeptical about this. And that's why I say that with the money that is precious to you, the money you just cannot afford to lose, the money that's there for your children's college education, the money that's there for your retirement, the money that's there that you're saving to make a down payment on a house, whatever it is, that money you can't speculate with. And speculation is any time you are trying to beat what the market is making available to everybody else. Treat it with the utmost respect. Treat it with the utmost skepticism and the utmost caution. Do not let anybody say this is a sure thing. Do not let anybody tell you that some event is inevitable and here's a way to capitalize on it with your precious money. Do not let any news that you hear inspire you to think that, oh, everything is going in this direction rather than that direction. Be very, very cautious. If you want to bet on the future, if you want to take advantage of somebody's expertise, so-called, if you want to take advantage of some information you believe that the market itself hasn't really realized yet, then do it with money you can afford to lose, because you are speculating anytime you try to beat the return that the market is making available for everyone. And I'm going to hammer this over and over again on future broadcasts as I have on past broadcasts. The most important thing that I can provide to you is that kind of skepticism and that kind of respect for what you have worked so hard to earn. Well, when we come back, we'll take our first question of the day, and I invite you to call in with a question if you like. The number is 1-800-259-9231, or you can email me, question@harrybrown.org. question@harrybrown.org. Brown has an E on the end of it. The number again, 1-800-259-9231, and we'll be right back. This is Harry Brown. My book, Fail-Safe Investing, will tell you what you need to know to create your own bulletproof investment portfolio, one that will protect you whatever the future brings, prosperity, inflation, recession, even depression. And it will protect you without your having to predict the future or tinker with the portfolio. Best news of all, at libertyfree.com, you can download the book for only $9.75. That's right, just $9.75. You can read the book on your computer screen or print it out and read it in your easy chair. If you're tired of losing money on your investments, tired of the pressure of looking for the best investments, Here's the way to have your own bulletproof portfolio, no matter how big or small your savings. To get a free sample chapter from Failsafe Investing, just go to libertyfree.com right now. That's libertyfree.com. Well, with that happy music, let's look to things more optimistic, and let's begin talking with Alan in Tennessee. Good afternoon, Alan.
Good afternoon, Mr. Brown. How are you?
Just fine. What's up today?
Well, I've listened to your political show for a long time. This is only the second time I've been able to have the opportunity to listen to your investment show, and I'm delighted that you decided to bring this about. So this is a good idea.
Well, thank you.
I had a question. I want to switch gears with you a little bit. Because of the various things going on in the world and in the economy here in the United States, there are a lot of people who, of course, you have hammered the age-old seminal idea that you cannot predict the future, but there are a lot of big-time investors these days that one in particular I read Jim Rogers said here a while back that whoever wins the presidency will inherit a poison chalice when it comes to the strength of the U.S. dollar. What do you take on that?
Well, first, we need to put it in context, and the context is that people like that have been predicting this for a long, long time and may well have said the same thing in the year 2000, that whoever got elected was going to face a very, very weak dollar. And we really can't predict the future. If you look at what has happened when the euro first came out, it began to sink immediately against the dollar, went down and down, and it was very easy to say the euro was a bad idea, and the market was telling us that they never should have had this monetary union, and on and on and on. And then the next thing you know, the euro turns around and goes up and comes back to par with the dollar, and then keeps going up from there. And so all the predictions about the failure of the euro and the failure of the European Monetary Union were for naught. And now we're seeing the same thing in the other direction. I've been looking at this. I have, oh gosh, I hate to say this, but for over 35 years, which means I must have started when I was about 5 years old. But in the 1970s, the dollar took a nosedive because of the fact that it had been price controlled for so long, in the sense that there was a fixed exchange rate system which held currencies at specific prices against the dollar, and governments intervened by buying and selling their own currency in order to keep these fixed rates. Well, the fixed exchange rate system collapsed in 1973, and the dollar went down. And that was the beginning of the predictions that the dollar was going to go to zero, in effect, that eventually the dollar would become worthless. And those predictions continued through the 80s, even during a strong dollar. They continued through the 90s, and they've continued today. Now, that's the context of all of this, and so we have to realize that this is not something new, the idea that the dollar is in real trouble. But someday the dollar may really fall a tremendous amount, to the point where it's worth only, say, 10 cents for $1 in terms of euros. That can happen, and you need to be protected against it because you don't know whether it's going to happen tomorrow morning, whether it's going to happen 5 years from now, whether it's going to happen 20 years from now, or whether it's never going to happen. We simply don't know. So if you have a portfolio that's split between stocks, bonds, gold, and cash, and the dollar does go crazy downward, then the gold is going to take care of you, and it's going to take care of whatever losses that causes in stocks and bonds and cash, and it's going to still probably produce a profit. That's what's happened with that kind of a portfolio over the last 30 years. The dollar's gone through some bad stages, but yet it hasn't hurt the portfolio at all because that's when gold rises. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. To add a little bit to what you your monologue there with the talking about the Bush giant infomercial there. One of the things that surprised me as of late, it seems that any with the political spin, that any kind of information of the markets that comes out, the Treasury officials and Alan Greenspan and everybody else in the whole world comes on and says, no, everything's going to be fine. The oil price goes to $55 a barrel, and they come out the next day and say, well, it's not going to hurt the economy one bit. Everything will be fine.
Yes.
You know, I see a lot of this, especially close to election time, so you really do have to take this kind of thing with a grain of salt.
Sure. And even what investment advisors say, and this is not to knock investment advisors because they can provide some very, very good services to you, as I've discussed on a previous show, but we need to realize that when an investment advisor says, this means that such and such is going to happen, you don't know unless you've been following this investment advisor that he's been saying that this such and such is going to happen for the last 5 years.
Investment advisors are systemically predicated on the fact that they can predict the future in some form or fashion. The whole industry is geared toward that.
Right, and so every event has to ratify the prediction that's already been made.
Yeah.
So it's just like a political campaign. Whatever happens, this shows why you have to vote for my guy. this shows how my prediction is coming true, you know.
Yeah, that's great.
So thank you so much for the call, Alan.
Appreciate the show. Wonderful idea.
Thank you so much. All right, let's talk now with Shannon. And I don't have your location, Shannon. Where are you?
I am in Atlanta.
Oh, okay. And we're going to be taking a break shortly, but we'll get you started with your question here, and then we'll come back and discuss the question after the break. What's up?
Okay. I'm actually a big fan of your writings. I've read several of your books, and I'd say that according to your permanent portfolio plan. The biggest question, it's not really an investment-related question, but more of a tax-related question, just because I want to, you know, keep as much money as I can to save.
Sure.
In my investments. The nature of my business, I'm actually a contract software developer, and I've had my own business for the past 10 years. I started when I was 22 years old, and it took several years to get off the ground, but I finally have gotten it off the ground. And this past year, we had a very large customer that was responsible for about 95% of our revenue, and they licensed our software, bought it, took it in-house. And what it amounts to is I'm going to be getting about three times what my yearly salary has been a payment in this year.
As a temporary situation.
As a temporary situation. Next year I expect our revenue, my revenues will drop, very low, probably to about one-fifth of my annual salary. And we've gotten things in place to try to build back up and deal with the loss of this customer. But, it was a good payment. And my biggest question is there any sort of a thing that you can do with the government to spread out
the tax liability to keep it in a lower bracket?
That's correct.
Okay. Let's come back after the break and talk about that. I'm not a tax expert myself, but there are a couple of suggestions that I can make, and we'll do that when we come back. And folks, if you have a question, call 1-800-259-9231. And it doesn't even need to be a question. It may be a comment on something that somebody else has said on this show, either I've said or one of the callers. The number again, 1-800-259-9231, or question@harrybrown.org. We'll be right back. This is Harry Brown. My book, Fail-Safe Investing, will tell you what you need to know to create your own bulletproof investment portfolio, one that will protect you whatever the future brings, prosperity, inflation, recession, even depression, and it will protect you without your having to predict the future or tinker with the portfolio. Best news of all, at libertyfree.com, you can download the book for only $9.75. That's right, just $9.75. You can read the book on your computer screen or print it out and read it in your easy chair. If you're tired of losing money on your investments, tired of the pressure of looking for the best investments, here's the way to have your own bulletproof portfolio, no matter how big or small your savings. To get a free sample chapter from Failsafe Investing, just go to libertyfree.com right now. That's libertyfree.com. Hello again, Harry Brown here, and we're talking about money this afternoon, as we talk about money every Sunday afternoon at this time, and more specifically right now we're talking with Shannon in Atlanta, who is faced with a problem that does come to people, many, many people, from time to time in their lives, that they are going to have a special payment, a special income that is going to pile up in 1 year, and then of course, things will go back either to normal or even less than normal thereafter. So with this huge amount of income in 1 year, you're going to be shoved up into a much higher bracket and then, of course, have to pay a much higher tax on the money, and then you go back to normal the next year. Well, there are ways of spreading this out, but as I said, I'm not a tax expert. I'm going to instead refer you to where I think you can get the best answers. First of all, there's a book called Keep What You Earn by Terry Coxon. And Terry has been a colleague of mine for many, many years. And you might say that this is special pleading because I consider him a friend and value him as a friend. But more than anything else, I value him as a great source of information, and especially on things relating to taxes. Whenever I have a question about taxes, I get on the phone and call Terry. And he wrote a book a few years back called Keep What You Earn. And of course, the tax laws change from time to time, but the principles remain the same. And for anybody who's concerned about sheltering income or in any way dealing with the tax situation, especially as it relates to investments or special situations such as Shannon has posed here, I think this is an excellent book. And one of the nice things about the book is it starts with the simplest things you can do, such things as just buying mutual funds that don't pay large dividends, because dividends just create a tax liability without giving you any extra money. Such things as IRAs and 401ks and things of that sort, which almost anybody can set up just by going to a broker and saying, I want you to set up an IRA for me. But then it goes from there to things that are a little bit more complicated, and then a little bit more complicated, more sophisticated, and more powerful, and keeps getting further and further in that direction till you wind up with such things as tax havens and that sort of thing, which are not suitable for every individual, but may be suitable for a few people with a lot of money available and a great liability that would exist if they couldn't get the money offshore or whatever it might be. So I think it's an excellent book, and I will put on the radio links page a link to this because it's still available. I believe it's out of print now, but if you go to Amazon, they will always give you three or four book dealers who have that book in stock, and you can just choose among them. They tell you what condition the book is in and so forth. And that's number one. Number two is that if you don't find it there and you need further information, then you might want to consult with Terry Coxon. And on the radio links page, in addition to the link to the book, I will also put Terry's phone number, and you can call him and see whether he believes that he can help you. And I don't think that he's terribly expensive, but for a lot of money at stake, I think it would be worth it. And that's, I'm afraid, the best that I can do because I am not an expert on tax matters, and I hate to get into areas that I don't feel completely confident about, because the worst thing I could do would be to give you a bum steer. And even with my little tax knowledge, I listen to investment shows from time to time on the radio, and I cringe when I hear somebody giving advice that I know is much oversimplified and is not going to solve a particular problem that's been posed. So, Shannon, I hope that even though I can't personally give you an answer to your question, I hope that this will be of some help to you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, I wish yearned for the days where your tax program that you were talking about during your last two campaigns was, more people were talking about it.
Oh, you mean repeal the income tax?
And replace it with nothing, yes.
Yes, absolutely. Just for anybody who hasn't heard that spiel, the federal government, if it stuck to the Constitution and did not engage in programs that had no constitutional authority, could get by on just the tariffs and excise taxes that are being collected today. And I'm not big fan of those taxes, obviously, but just leaving them as they are now and repealing the income tax, the corporate income tax, the estate tax, gift tax, Social Security tax, all of these other taxes, the federal government could get by with just the tariffs and excise taxes being collected today. You probably heard Bush and Kerry discuss that during the debates. No, maybe you didn't. Maybe they overlooked that. As a matter of fact, I don't remember any discussion of the Constitution at all. Oh, well, maybe next time. All right. Thanks so much for your call, Shannon, and best of luck to you.
You too. Bye-bye.
And I will be, at the next break, I will take the time to post that information about Terry Cox and his book on the Radio Links page. To get to the Radio Links page, you just go to my website, harrybrown.org. And it doesn't matter there whether you put an E on it or not on the word Brown, just harrybrown.org. And right at the top, you'll see links to articles and websites mentioned on the radio shows. And click there, and you go to the Radio Links page, and you'll see there the investment show. Just click on that, and then for every week of the investment show, anything that might be mentioned, such as this book or Terry Coxon, you will find the link there or the phone number or the information, whatever it is you need. And you can do that each week. You can also get links on the political show. And as long as the political show came up, let me mention, if you're not aware of it, on this wonderful network, Genesis Communication Network, I also have a show where I discuss political and social things, not investment things, on Saturday night, and that's from 10 to 12 Eastern Time, 7 to 9 Pacific Time, 9 to 11 Central Time, and so forth. And you can hear that, and I also should mention that this Tuesday, from 3 to 5 Eastern Time, I will be hosting the Midas Hour as a guest host in place of Michael Trudeau for the day. That's Election Day. And they asked me to do it because they thought it might be appropriate if I hosted the show on Election Day since I ran for president twice. But I'm not quite sure what the appropriateness is, but I'm going to be glad to do it. And if you tune in, we might have a jolly old time talking about what a ridiculous election this is turning out to be. Whatever. But one little bit more housekeeping here. I've gotten an email asking if there are transcripts of these shows available. And no, they're not, but they are all archived. And if you go to, again, to harrybrown.org, right at the top of the homepage, you'll see archives of the radio show. And one other housekeeping note, several people have asked me about the music we use on this show, and I'll take care of that when we come back. And I'm also going to talk about real estate, as I promised. So stay tuned. We've got much more ahead of us. Welcome back. This is Harry Brown, and before we went to the break, I said I would say something about the music on this show, which may seem strange, but surprisingly, I have gotten a number of inquiries about the music on the show, people saying that they really like it, and several people saying that they never liked jazz, but that they like this because it's happy music. Well, I just want to explain that there are two kinds of jazz. Modern jazz and Dixieland are the two simplified ways of explaining it. What you're hearing on this show is Dixieland, which preceded modern jazz, and it's a kind of free-form type of music where you have about 6 to 8 musicians, and they improvise as they go along on it, and each one does his own thing at the same time as the others, and it creates that kind of wild, disorganized music, but which actually makes a point and which propels forward and gives it that very, very happy sound. Modern jazz, on the other hand, uses a lot of very special kinds of harmonies, which to my ear are very depressing, and so I've never liked modern jazz, but I do like Dixieland. And if you want to know more about this music, you can again go to my website, harrybrown.org, and go to the radio page, and on the radio page down near the bottom you'll see a link to the music, and you just click on that and you wind up at the music page, and there you will see the names of each of the pieces that are being played, and if you really like them, you can actually link from there to the Amazon page of the CD that it came from if you want to follow up and get some more of the music. Now, I promised to talk about real estate. There is a lot of misunderstanding about real estate, and that is that people think that it is a very good investment, that it never goes down, and so forth and so on. Well, I don't believe that real estate is an investment. It has none of the characteristics of an investment, like stocks or bonds or gold. You can't look in the newspaper on any given day and find out what your so-called investment is worth. You can't call your broker and find out what it's worth. You can't call your broker and say, I want to sell my real estate today. Please do it and invest the proceeds in such and such. You can't do that the way you can with stocks, bonds, or gold. If you want to sell it, you've got to find a broker, put it on the market, and it might be a day, it might be a week, it might be a month, it might be a year before somebody actually buys your real estate. We have some friends who live down the street from us who put their home on the market last year and said that they were building a new house at the same time, I should mention, and they were hoping to be out of the house they were in and move into the house they were building by Christmas. Well, here it is, Halloween of the following year, and they still haven't sold the house yet. Now, other times, a house might sell in a week. All I'm saying is that you don't know how long it's going to take before you can get your money out of it, whereas with stocks, bonds, or gold, you can sell it immediately, get the money immediately, even if it's at a loss or at a profit or whatever it might be. And lastly, when you do sell, you don't get the proceeds immediately from your real estate and holdings. And the sale then goes into escrow, and it might be 30 days or 60 days by the time you actually get your money. So if real estate isn't an investment, as we think of an investment, what is it exactly? Well, in my mind, it can be one of three different things. Number one, and most especially for most people, it is a consumption item, just like the car you buy or the furniture you have in your home or other things that are major purchases that you have that you purchase because you enjoy having it. You would much rather own your own home than to rent it, because of the control you have over it when you own it, just as you buy a car maybe rather than leasing or renting it because of advantages you see in owning it as a consumption item. And that's probably the number one reason that people buy real estate. Now, the second possibility is that real estate is a business where you actually work 40, 50, 60 hours a week, scouting out properties, buying them and selling them, and trying to beat the market because of your superior knowledge in business and the business specifically of real estate, your eye for locations and for future possibilities and so on, much like somebody in the furniture business who hopes to outsell his competitors by being a better analyst in terms of what's likely to sell next week and next month and so forth. So real estate can be a very valid business. The third possibility is that it is a speculation, that with money you can afford to lose, you decide to take a chance on buying something other than the home you're going to live in because you think that it's in a location where prices are going to go up in the future. Now, you know it's an illiquid investment. You know you can't get your money out of it when you want it and so on, but because it's with money you can afford to lose, you're willing to take a chance, and so you speculate in it. And that's a perfectly valid thing to do. I just don't want to think of it as an investment, and it doesn't fit into what I call the permanent portfolio, because it's like the elephant in your living room. You've got to build everything else around it if you do. All right, we'll be back in a couple of minutes, so don't go away. This is Harry Brown. My book, Fail-Safe Investing, will tell you what you need to know to create your own bulletproof investment portfolio, one that will protect you whatever the future brings, prosperity, inflation, recession, even depression, and it will protect you without your having to predict the future or tinker with the portfolio. Best news of all, at libertyfree.com, you can download the book for only $9.75. That's right, just $9.75. You can read the book on your computer screen or print it out and read it in your easy chair. If you're tired of losing money on your investments, tired of the pressure of looking for the best investments, here's the way to have your own bulletproof portfolio, no matter how big or small your savings. To get a free sample chapter from Fail-Safe Investing, just go to libertyfree.com right now. That's libertyfree.com. All right, Harry Brown here, and this is our final segment, so let me thank you for being tuned in today, and I hope you come back next week, and I want to thank John Harmon for taking care of everything in Minnesota. We have an email from Nick in Urbana, Illinois. He said, I'm interested in how I've read so often, mostly in gloom and doom, weatherman type investment articles, that the U.S. consumerism is so debt-based. I take a certain amount of pride in how I have no credit card debt and such. Do you have any ideas on why there seems to be so much debt in the U.S., or even if it's as bad as some people like to make it out to be? I'd appreciate your take on responsible use of debt. Well, that's a very good question. First of all, most of what you read is overblown. In the free market, when people are borrowing too much, then lenders stop lending, because people cannot afford to repay new loans because they're already overextended on the loans they have. So this is just one way among so many that the market just swings back and forth and automatically regulates itself. But then, if you don't have a completely free market, as we don't now have now, and the government is intervening, as it does by issuing new paper money and then slowing down the rate of increase in money and then speeding up and then slowing down and so forth, this can create problems. It can speed up the rate of money growth, making more money available to people, more money available for lending and so on, and people do get loaded up with debt, and then suddenly the Federal Reserve System is worried about inflation, so it slows down the rate of increase, and people don't have as much money as they expected to have. And the result is that they can't handle the obligations that they expected to be able to handle this year. It isn't necessarily that they don't have as much money as they had last year. They may have more than they had last year, but they don't have as much as they expected to have. The raise they got was not as great as they had planned on. The increase in sales that a businessman has is not as large as he had thought he would have by now. And the result is that people suddenly are scrambling around trying to cover all of their payments, and they want to sell out things that they have, and they don't want to buy anything else, and that's a period of what we call tight money. So on a personal level, it makes sense to have less debt than you can afford to have, because you may not be able to afford next year as much debt as you can afford this year. There's nothing wrong with debt per se. It is a perfectly natural function of the market for people with excess capital to lend it to people who are undercapitalized but have expectations of being able to repay whatever they borrow in the future. So there's nothing wrong with debt per se, but on a personal level, it's important not to be overextended. That's the best I can say with that. Well, I sure appreciate your tuning in today, and I hope you come back again next week. So I will leave you with a thought that I hope you do something nice for yourself and your family this week. But most of all, come back next week. This is Harry Brown. Bye-bye. Pop.